listening to the Fantasy Movie League podcast, the free fantasy game for Hollywood. Pick 8 movies for your own fantasy cineplex each week, earn points from real weekend box office results. Compete for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com.
This is Wednesday, July 27th, 2016, and it's week 10 of the Fantasy Movie League summer season. I'm Pete Johnson, the Fantasy Movie League nerd, and I'm joined by Patrick Reardon, the box office guy. And Patrick, how fabulous were you this weekend?
Yeah, not fabulous enough. You clearly called that one last week. I used one screen of it for filler, but I wish I had used more.
So, Absolutely Fabulous has the unusual distinction of being on our slate for 1 week, hitting Best Performer, and then disappearing.
It's like the opposite of War Room.
Yeah, exactly, which hung on forever. So one and done. It did $1.86 million this past week. And like you said, I talked about it as a potential best performer here on the podcast last week, but I thought it was going to top out at 1.7. It did way better than even I thought. That Perfect Cinema ended up being 4 screens of Lights Out, 1 of Mike and Dave, and 3 screens of Absolutely Fabulous. Only 56 players had that one, Patrick.
Which is not a lot of players.
Now, if you read Phil's FunFlix article on Monday, over half of FML players bet on Star Trek. And the most common Cineplex was 1 screen of Star Trek, 1 of Dory, 2 of Purge, 2 of The Shallows, and 2 of Absolutely Fabulous. 867 people had that. But there were a lot of big shifts in leagues based on how Lights Out performed.
Yeah, that lineup you mentioned, I was pretty close. I think I was one screen differently. When the Thursday numbers came out, like, it was good enough for me to stay on Star Trek. That's kind of what I was hoping for. But Lights Out did well enough where I've really got to give that consideration. It just got to the point where, like, I'm just going to ride with, like, Star Trek and hope Lights Out was front-loaded. But Lights Out paid off, so anybody who went 4 screens there, it really paid off big time.
So backseat directing now in the lead overall, hitting a couple folks went over the $1 billion mark here this past week. Ophelia's Plex still in there. Team Zizou hitting up there for the first time. And Exie's No Bonus Plex. That makes me think of Dexie's Midnight Runners for some reason. That Exie's, I don't think that's what that was striving for, but that just strikes that chord with me for some reason.
Regardless, one of the greatest one-hit wonders of all time.
So some crowding now at the top. You know, we had this scenario in the spring season where one person got out ahead of everybody and everybody's playing catch up. But this season here in the summer, we've got some good competition the whole time going on here.
Again, like, the longer you go, I think the better people are going to be as players. So in the future, you're going to see a lot more crowding at the top. It's going to be really hard to run away with things.
Now, we've got one more week left here of the View contest. And as a reminder, so the winner of that gets to go to the Peach Dragon premiere in Hollywood here in a couple of weeks. Backseat Directing is up alive and winning that one with $902,294,000 with a comfortable but certainly not insurmountable lead, a little less than $5 million ahead of Exie's No Bonus, a little bit more than Ophelia's Flex. So we could see some swings this week, and although, as I think we're going to talk through this week a little bit later, I think there's probably 2 films that are standing above the rest. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out for this last week of the View contest and who's going to get a chance to go to that Peach Dragon premiere.
Which is also another very good prize, and, like, later on we'll be talking to one of our prize winners. Like, we give away some good stuff here.
Now, I don't know if you looked at NFL news today, but I saw a familiar name pop up in my NFL news feed. Our good friend Gary Barnidge, he passed his physical today after having surgery in the offseason. He's going to get to participate in practice here soon when camps start up here pretty quickly.
And he's got a new quarterback situation this year. So, like, you know, maybe LeBron helped Cleveland break the curse and this is finally the Browns' year. But regardless, I think Gary's going to have a good season.
So he's 8-2 souls, because his number is 82, and he's got 431,391,000, trailing quite a bit in his own league, which is currently led by Wolf of FML Street. But I think he's going to come back strong when he gets a chance to get his second season underway in the fall. If he can keep his Tuesdays, his days off, focused on FML, I think he's going to do okay.
like, hopefully, because he's starting training camp right now, so he's a very busy man, passing physicals, trying to get ready for the season. So, like, maybe in the fall, like, we'll see how that goes for him.
Now, this is also the last week of the Nerdist League, and we see some familiar names there. So Wolf of FML Street is also leading that one, but Milk is a Bad Choice is close behind, as is Soul Star Cineplex.
Gotta love it. Anytime anybody drops an Anchorman reference, I'm all for it.
All right. And then we haven't been given some love lately to the second half leagues. So we're a couple of weeks into that right now. And Exy's bringing it there. So Exy's No Bonus Plex, leading that one by a hair. There's a couple of folks, including friend of the program, M37 and CCR, both at $188,420,000, just about $500,000 behind Exy's No Bonus Plex there in the second half league. So lots of fun with those leagues. What's been going on with the brackets here that you've been running, Patrick?
Well, see, last week we did the best of Woody Allen, which some people were really into. A lot of people just did not see enough of the movies to participate. But as expected, Annie Hall, heavily favored, took care of business there. And I don't know, hopefully somebody, this inspired them to like check out a Woody Allen movie if they weren't previously familiar with them.
See,
I'm not sure if it...
That's your ulterior motive here, right? Was to get people to go check out Woody Allen movies?
Yeah, you know, if you can, like, you know, broaden things a little bit, never a bad thing. But Annie Hall won easily. This week, to coincide with the release of Jason Bourne, we're doing the movies, the roles of Matt Damon, and we're down to our Elite Eight. Everything's been going kind of according to plan. I like Ocean's 11 upset Rounders, which I was a little surprised by. But right now, it looks like, you know, Will Hunting, Jason Bourne, The Martian, and, you know, Mr. Ripley is like getting a really good contest though from Ocean, so that's kind of the Cinderella story right now. But it's been a fun one. A lot of votes have been coming in, and people have been having fun with it.
Coolness. Well, this past week was the last week for the World Cup that Ari, M37, and a couple other folks have been running. And Project Mayhem, who we gave some shout-out to last week, they ended up taking it after a long, hard-fought World Cup competition. So it'll be cool to see that start up again. I think they're going to start that up again in the fall, but congrats to Project Mayhem, and I think everybody had a really fun time playing that with the World Cup.
It sounds like fun. I'm sorry I missed it. Like, yeah, I'm going to try and join in the fall.
Now, our friends at Loot Crate, they've got a pretty cool thing going here for August. So not only do they have a new theme here for August, so if you sign up for Loot Crate before August 19th, you'll get this crate. But they now have what they're calling Loot Crate DX. Did you see this? So first, the theme for August is the anti-hero. So it's from bad guys doing good things for the wrong reasons to good guys with questionable tactics. August is all about the anti-hero. You get to walk the hero-villain line with this 100% exclusive collection of items from DC Comics, Archer, Dark Horse, and Kill Bill. This box is going to include two great collectibles, a wearable, and of course you get your monthly tee and your pin with that. But if that's not enough Loot Crate for you, this month there's something called Loot Crate DX. Bigger
there's
box.
There's never enough Loot Crate, so I'm
I know. So this one, it's a bigger box with bigger loot. So every month Loot Crate DX brings you a higher caliber collection of items from your favorite pop culture franchises and delivers them right at your door. So the regular Loot Crate, you go to www.lootcrate.com/FML, and for less than 20 bucks a month, you get the standard Loot Crate box. For less than 50 bucks a month, so it's a little higher price point, you get at least $100 worth of goodies, from collectibles to apparel to home goods and more stuff like that. So August is the perfect time to explore this murky world of the anti-hero. You get exclusive items from, like I said before, DC Comics, Borderlands. There's a Marvel, including two stylish wearables and a cool collectible to, quote, light up your life. So if you want to find out what that is, you got to sign up for one of the boxes.
And it's very cool stuff. Obviously, the anti-hero meant to coincide with Suicide Squad, which we'll definitely get into last week, which might be the last, you know, potential huge blockbuster this summer. So Loot Crate's got some good stuff going on.
That's how you get from A to B. Anti-hero for Suicide Squad. I like the tie-in. So let's talk about Week 10 here, Patrick. The question I've been waiting to ask you all day is, what in the heck has been going on with Jason Bourne? So its long-range forecast, as recently as Saturday, was $65 million. The Pro Box Office weekend forecast for this is $49 million, even though the theater count is over 4,000. What is going on with this movie?
That's kind of terrifying. Like, I turned my column in like before those numbers came out. I've got it in the high 50s, low 60s. I think 61 is kind of the number that's kind of been in my head. But like, to go all the way down to 49, like, the reviews have come out. They haven't been great, but at the same time, like, this is, seems like it would be a little critic proof with, like, you know, Matt Damon coming back to the franchise. There'd be a little bump. But I think what we're seeing again is, like, so many sequels and reboots have just failed to live up to their predecessors. There might be some of that going on with Jason Bourne.
Now, it probably doesn't matter because of some of the things going on with other films. It would really have to get in the high 60s, low 70s to justify being your anchor. But do you know who's an expert on Jason Bourne?
That might be our guest this week.
Zach Salk. So let's take a listen to Zach's trip to the premiere of Jason Bourne in Vegas last week. Well, I'm very happy to be joined again by Zach Salk, our Jason Bourne contest winner. Zach, welcome back to the program, and let us know, how did the trip to Vegas go?
Hey, thanks for having me. It was phenomenal. It was so much fun. My brother and I got on a plane Sunday morning, and they flew us out, and we landed, got to the hotel in the afternoon, just hung out by the pool for a little bit, got to see the city. See, we were at Caesar's Palace, which is where the premiere was located, and so our room was, it was pretty awesome. We were in like a suite that was up above the pool area.
Nice.
And yeah, it was great. I mean, this is my first time being in that part of the strip, and it was just, Caesar's Palace is like amazing, and the the weather was great. It was like hot but sunny and just good relaxation weekend weather. So we hung out a bit. And
well, now let me ask you one thing about the room here real quick. So this is, if you've never been to Caesar's, right? Caesar's is kind of almost set up like a, almost like an oval, where, so it sounds like you were up in one of the rooms that wasn't facing the strip, but one that's facing sort of that internal area where all the pools are and like all the urns and all the statues and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. We were in one of the towers. I think it was the Palace Tower.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So you had a really nice view and you hung out at the pool. So what were the other activities they had you do? And I guess this is on Monday, or was this still Sunday?
So this was Sunday, and there weren't a whole lot of activity. Like, there wasn't anything planned. We just were basically left to our own devices. So we hung out for a while, you know, had some drinks, went to dinner that night at a nice restaurant in Caesar's Palace. And I spent a little time at the in the casino area and lost some money, which was good.
It's funny how that works out, right? Like,
yeah.
I think it's something like 20 of the 25 largest hotels in the world are all on that strip, and it turns out they're funded through gambling money. How is that possible that they make money off of gambling?
I know. You know what? It's really easy to just keep going.
Okay, so you hung out, you got to gamble a little bit, get sort of that Jones out. What was the premiere like on Monday, and what kind of cool things did you get to do?
The premiere itself was awesome. So they had it set up in the Coliseum. There was a nice little entryway, got a glimpse of Matt Damon as we walked in. He was taking pictures with the press and, you know, doing the whole meet and greet thing. And we got into the main area, which was like sort of the lobby. It was just really nice, you know, set up beautifully. There was lots of people. Everyone was wearing suits and it was pretty fancy. And then we got into the theater, and there was a just huge screen. We had pretty good seats, and Paul Greengrass came out to introduce the film. He spoke a little bit. Then the cast came up, and it was like everyone was there. You know, Tommy Lee Jones was there. He got a huge round of applause.
Sure.
And, of course, Matt Damon did as well. And so they all talked on stage for a couple minutes, and then we got to watch the movie, which was great. It was like just a pure classic Bourne movie, very similar to the originals, which I'm a huge fan of, and enjoyed it a lot.
Now, can you confirm that it sounds like he made close to $1 million per line? He doesn't have a whole lot of dialogue in this movie, am I right?
There is not a lot of dialogue. I'm not clear on how much he was paid to do it, but it wouldn't surprise me. It was very much an action movie.
What's the explosion to dialogue line ratio, would you say?
I would say it's almost 1-to-1.
Okay. All right. So if you're a fan of explosions, this movie is for you.
Yeah. Maybe not that many explosions, okay, but in terms of action to dialogue, definitely.
And
definitely so on the action side.
Part of the reason they had a premiere there in Vegas is because a lot of the action takes place there in Vegas, right? There's like a big chase scene that takes place on the Strip, I believe.
Yes, there's a big Vegas sequence in the movie.
And now that you...
So it was cool to...
Well, now that you've been there, did that context like change for you at all that make the film more enjoyable? Or were you like, yeah, no way could you actually have a chase scene on the Strip?
I mean, it was really cool to see, sort of get that aerial view, because I feel like we were pretty, you know, we were like down in it. So I can definitely, it lended some good aerial context, I guess, to where we were and where the other hotels were. Because, right, you know, Google Maps doesn't quite cover that same
area. No, it does not.
Area, yeah. But it was awesome. I mean, it was just... The visuals were fantastic, and there were some good, you know, some good Caesar's Palace shots. So my brother and I were both like, yeah, that's where we are.
Cool.
It's pretty cool.
Now, what about, was there an after party, or was there food after, or were you just kind of left to your own devices after the premiere part was over?
So there was actually, we got to go to the after dinner. It was a little like dinner happy hour kind of thing in Nobu Restaurant, which is also in Caesar's Palace, and it's a very fine sushi establishment. They had, you know, waiters were carrying around trays of like little appetizers. There were these really good tacos, and there was a whole sushi buffet, and we just helped ourselves. There was, let's see, saw Riz Ahmed there and Julia Stiles at the after party. Didn't see any other major cast members. But that was pretty cool. And then, yeah, I mean, it was pretty much just us hanging out and enjoying the festivities.
Nice. Now, were like the higher rollers, were they like in a cordoned off section, or was it just pretty much like a big room and you could interact with whoever you had courage to interact with?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't a huge, like not that many people were invited, I don't think. It seemed like it was a relatively exclusive venue. And the restaurant itself is not that big, so it was kind of just a lot of people, you know, intermingling in the same area.
Well, cool. So now they send you home. Did they send you home just early the next day on Tuesday, or did you get to hang out any more in Vegas?
So we got to hang out a little bit more Sunday night, lost some more money, Monday night, I guess, and had just a good time there. And then on Tuesday, our flight was in the afternoon, so we did get to wake up, eat some breakfast, go back to the pool for a little bit, and then pack up and head home.
Well, cool deal. So it sounds like you spent your whole time there at Caesar's.
Yeah, we didn't do a whole lot of exploring.
Well, that's the thing about the way they set up the Vegas hotels, is that they're kind of, each one is kind of a city into in itself. And as you discovered, you can spend like a whole weekend and never leave the grounds of whatever hotel you're at.
Oh, it's massive. And Caesars also has like, there's a pretty cool shopping section attached to it. I think it's called the Forum Shop. Yeah. So it was like, you literally never had to leave the hotel for anything.
Yeah. There's a sports memorabilia shop there that has Pete Rose on a regular basis. Like Tuesday at noon, you can go get a Pete Rose autograph at that place.
Oh, that's funny.
So you said before, the interview that we did with you before you got a chance to go on the trip, but after you'd won it, you'd said that you'd kind of never been as an adult. Was there something about Vegas that surprised you coming to it with through adult eyes that you didn't sort of see when you were younger?
I guess I don't know if anything really surprised me. It was pretty much what I expected, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, it's, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to do adult things. And, you know, my memory of when I was 12 isn't all that great. I remember mostly like hanging out in the casino and going to the pool, which we did again, except
just this time you got to lose money.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, cool. It sounds like you had a great time. It sounds like it was an amazing experience you got to have as part of winning the contest. Congrats on that again. There's now thousands of people who are jealous of the experience you got to have. And good luck the rest of the season, and good luck on the, you know, the next series of contacts, whatever that happens to be, and whoever we happen to partner with on those.
Yeah, thank you. And I just want to say a quick, huge thank you to, you know, Fantasy Movie League and Universal and the Jason Bourne movie. Like, it was an amazing experience, and I'm probably never going to have something like this again. My Cinemaplex is currently not doing all that well since I won the contest. So
hey, scoreboard, man. You won, really special. Counted.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thanks, Zach, and hopefully we'll have a chance to get you on again when you win the next contest. So he got to do some cool stuff there, didn't he?
It sounds like that's the story of, like, every movie premiere. Like, you know, you watch it. Like, everybody loves the movie there because you're, like, watching in front of the home crowd. And there's always a little after party where there's a couple of the supporting players go, but none of the big stars come out. So, like, yeah, I've seen this drill before many times. But it sounds like he had a great time, so I'm glad we were able to do that for him.
Caesars, not a bad hotel to have your first adult experience there in Vegas.
Oh, my God. Like, what was my first? I think it was, like, one of the crappy tower at Circus Circus was my first, like, post-21, like, Vegas experience. So Caesars Palace is a much better way to go.
Do you have a favorite Vegas hotel?
Oh, well, he mentioned the thing with Pete Rose earlier. And the last time I was in Vegas, I was at the Four Seasons, which is, like, the top four floors of Mandalay. And Pete Rose has since shifted his autograph signing, like, over to the shopping center at Mandalay. And I just missed him last time. But I've always been kind of curious and wanted to see that.
Sounds like you're way more up to date on your Pete Rose news than I am.
I like Mandalay, but I've always liked Caesars. Like, Caesars has aged very well. Like, it's always kind of cool. I usually, like, stop in there every once in a while. Like, every time I'm there, I'll stop in for a little bit.
I end up spending a lot of time at the Venetian. There's a lot of tech conferences there. Is that one?
Also a very good hotel that's been holding up very well.
So let's talk about the two movies that the pros really like this week. Let me ask you about Nerve first. The other question I've been wanting to ask you all week is, why would you choose a Wednesday opening for a movie like this in the middle of the summer when there's not a holiday calendar that would dictate you doing so? What's the thought process there for the studio?
I understand that if it's a Christmas week or if there's like 4th of July, you just want to get ahead, jump on the long weekend. Something like this, when you're in late July, like, it's not really going after the same audience that either Bourne or Bad Moms is going after. So, I don't know, if you have faith in the film, maybe you get a head start in the competition. But like, the other side of it is, if your movie's bad, then that gives people like 2 days for word of mouth to spread that the movie's not that good. I've never quite understood, like, the Wednesday week, like the Wednesday opening when there's not a holiday involved.
I want to give a shout out to B.S. White, 1970, friend of the program. I started a thread in the chatter and asked, this one looked really good to me earlier in the week, to try to talk me out of this. And his big thing was the Wednesday opening, that the thought there being that it might show you some, it's going to show you some warning signs, that even more so than what we typically get from the Thursday preview numbers, we're going to get 2 full days worth of numbers on this probably before we have to make a choice on Friday morning Pacific time.
Go ahead.
And M37 has some really good numbers on this in an article that he wrote earlier on in, I think this was last season, in one of his data columns, where he was talking about, if you take the Wednesday number and you multiply it by somewhere between 4.1 and 6.4, that's kind of the range that we might be looking for a full weekend of Nerve.
Which ended up getting like $1 million on Tuesday night previews, which wasn't bad, but it's going to be really like the Wednesday. I want to see how it does in that first full day before I kick in. Because the movie kind of snuck up on me a little bit. I just started seeing ads a couple weeks ago, so it's clearly targeting millennials. They're trying to make a hard social media push. I'm glad it's opening up on Wednesday, because by Friday morning, I'll have a good idea whether or not to play it. But the way it's priced, it only has to get to like around, you know, maybe 7 or 8 million to be a viable play. So just definitely watch those numbers.
Pro Box Office has it at 8.5. Showbuzz Daily had it at 8. And if you put those two together, it's second best performer, if you believe those numbers. But it would be second to the other movie that we need to talk about, Bad Moms.
Which I had the low, maybe mid-20s, but like the pros are going in even much higher, which like I wouldn't be shocked, but that seemed a little high to me. What was your take on that?
Yeah, I was thinking low. So the long-range forecast on that was actually a little bit lower, right? It was right at 21. I thought I had a chance to get to the mid-20s, and some folk, the pros certainly backed that up today. But do you know what always makes me nervous? Is when there's a review embargo. As we're talking right now on Wednesday evening, there's still no Rotten Tomatoes score for Bad Moms.
Which is never a good sign. So like that makes me a little apprehensive, but there seems to be enough momentum behind it. And not since Me Before You, first week of June, has there been a movie specifically targeting female audiences. So even if the reviews are bad, I think just like the dearth of like female-driven films in the marketplace might be enough to get it to that number.
So we'll have to see. What Thursday number would you want to see out of Bad Moms to make you think it's going to get in those mid-20s and be the runaway best performer?
Oh, Jesus. Now I'm trying to think. Like, what did Ghostbusters do?
Sure. Now you're asking me to look that up.
No, I'm looking like, was that like four? I'm like thinking half of Ghostbusters, whatever that did, like might like push me there. So maybe like, what are we talking, 2.5 here?
Ghostbusters did 3.4 on its way to a $46 million opening weekend. So you'd cut that in half and say like 1.7?
I don't know. Let's put it this way. If it starts with a 2, I'd feel really good about it. If it's 1.7, then I've really got to start thinking about it and crunching numbers and using the comparator at 8:45 in the morning on Friday.
Now, the way the pricing works out, though, this is interesting. So you can kind of hedge between these two if you would like. You've got enough room for 3 screens of Bad Moms and 2 screens of Nerves, along with a couple other things sort of at the bottom of that.
So, I think that's what I've got right now. I have three Bad Moms, 2 Nerves, and like filler, which I'll probably change 22 times.
Okay. Now there's 2 potential spoilers here. So to go along with some of these wider releases, we've got 2 smaller releases to consider here, Captain Fantastic and Cafe Society. What are some screen counts you'd want to see out of these guys in order for them to make a run at being a spoiler for best performer for one of these previous 2 films we just talked about?
Oh, geez. I'm looking at the screen counts right now. Like, I don't know if they've posted it yet for Woody Allen. Like, I don't know if Cafe Society gets like another 500, maybe that's enough to like sway me, but we priced it at 46, which I know, like, just the floor scares me there. So I'm probably going to stay away from that. And you can't really use it as filler. Whereas Captain Fantastic is our lowest price one this week, so like you might have to use it just out of necessity.
Yeah, you can in one of those low end filler in that same combination that I was talking about a moment ago. If you trust the pros this week, and the pros I think everybody knows have had kind of a rough summer so far, the pros would tell you to go with 3 Bad Moms, 2 Nerve, 2 Mike and Dave's, and 1 Captain Fantastic. By my numbers, Captain Fantastic would have to get up into like the 1.9s or so to threaten either of those two or have both of those falter.
And the reviews have been decent for Captain Fantastic, but not like, you know, art house, like, you know, high 90s and Rotten Tomatoes. Everybody's got to go see it. Like, I think right now it's in the high 70s, which is good, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to have a surge this week.
Well, here's one I want to throw your way. By the time you have to make your picks on Friday, you could have Bad Moms that has, you know, if Bad Moms comes in at like 1.1, right, that would probably be a signal that you might want to look elsewhere. And if these numbers on Nerve end up being bad as well, is there a movie that you like that's not one of these other ones that we've talked about in terms of these smaller releases that you might be willing to consider placing a bet on?
Let's see. Where would I place my money? I'm like just like perusing through here. I don't think. Yeah, I don't. For the first time, I think the entire year, Secret Life of Pets is kind of reasonably priced. Like I might go that way, but there would have to be bad numbers across the board for all 3 new movies. So if I had to like go into that, dip into that pool, like probably Secret Life of Pets. I think Lights Out, horror movies always have a big dip. I think Ghostbusters is going to lose a lot of screens this week, and it's going to continue to decline. So I guess gun to my head, I would go with the Pets.
I kind of like, and I may regret saying this, again, this is only if we get bad numbers on Bad Moms and on Nerve. You might consider Ice Age, and I only say that because it had a disappointing opening weekend, but because of the two-week rule, right, every theater has to sign up typically to keep a movie for 2 weeks. Unless it's Showtime's report on Thursday is just abysmal, it's going to hang on to all of those theaters in its second week. And because it so underperformed the first week, it might have a chance to rebound. And the pros currently have that one at, if you average the pros, they have that one at 11-4.
I like the logic there. It's not going to lose any screens. And of the new releases this week, none of them are targeting family. So that's also might be a viable way to go.
So, yeah, if we get bad numbers on both of those first two movies, I might go 7 screens of Ice Age and just swing for the fences and see what happens.
At this point in the season, if you want to make up ground, you've got to be bold. So that would be a risk that could pay off. It could also be a disaster.
Sink or swim. It could happen.
There you go.
All right. Well, that's it for week 10 of the Fantasy Movie League summer season. As always, you can find me on Twitter at NerdGuru. Patrick, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at TheBoxOfficeGuy.
Now, as always, you can get your Fantasy Movie League gear at FantasyMovieLeagueShop.com, and you can look for news about the league itself on Twitter at FML_movies, or you can do a Facebook search on Fantasy Movie League. Good luck, everyone. Until next week.
This has been the Fantasy Movie League podcast. Come join us and play for free in public leagues or against your friends at FantasyMovieLeague.com.